Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly episode 114. It is 15th of February 2021. And in the BNP Weekly, we always talk about what's happening in the Microsoft 365 area in general within the past week. Together with our covering articles with Microsoft and community members. I'm trying to learn this. Maybe you should actually.
Covering our tickles? What?
Yes, we tickle. We tickle. Now. This is going really well. So maybe we should actually write this down at some point so we know what we need to say. So maybe not. Anyway, so my name is Esa Hyvonen, and I'm a program manager in OneDrive SharePoint engineering side, looking at the Microsoft 365 ecosystem and helping people to adapt on things. And with me as a co-host doing exactly the similar things, actually, is Waldeck Mastercard.
Am I?
Yes.
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldeck Mastercard. I'm cloud developer advocate at Microsoft for Microsoft 365. And today with us, guest from sunny UK, Mr. Bill Ayers.
Sunny and warm UK.
Good morning, Bill.
Isn't it? Yeah. Not so sunny or warm.
Yeah. It looks sunny.
Lighting.
Hi, Valdek.
The window behind you, like, there is gloom, right? So.
Behind me is, you should be seeing, our latest equipment that we've installed, which is the ICL 2900 mainframe computer. We're sweating the equity on all this old hardware.
Surface Trio?
Not quite. No. Yeah. Surface Quadro, yeah.
Yes. So many surfaces.
Yeah. That's plenty of surfaces, that's true.
That is true. Cute. Bill, can you actually quickly explain who are you and what's your background?
Okay.
So is it all about mainframe computers then? So.
Well, I was, you know, many, many years ago.
It is on mainframe.
Yeah, it was many years ago. I used to do Fortran and C, later C++, doing engineering software. And then I moved to sort of more Unix, and I used to do Microsoft Windows programming as well. And then I sort of about 2003, I kind of moved to starting to really focus on the Microsoft platform. So, yeah. Bill Ayers, I'm an MVP for Office development. I'm also an MCT trainer and, of course, an MCM, which Microsoft Certified Masters.
Yeah. Everybody who has it is going to still keep on mentioning
how
that.
How do you know that somebody's a Microsoft Certified Master? Yeah, don't worry, they'll tell you. But
they'll tell you.
They still mention it in on conference.
But on the other hand, why wouldn't you?
Good.
It's a very, very unique achievement, right? So,
yeah.
Not so many of us, yeah. So,
and it's no longer possible to get either. So,
no, which is so sad. Yeah. But it was great fun, wasn't it? It was good fun.
Yeah. That was fun. It was really fun.
Yeah. So about 2003, moved back to Microsoft. But I still had these things that I built with XML and XSLT and Perl and things, and to build sort of content management systems and things like that. And then, there's this thing called SharePoint that does all that. Somebody's already figured out how to
do
that.
It does XML, XSLT.
If you remember, there was quite a, well, it still is probably somewhere under there, XML. So, so kind of moved into SharePoint, and 2006, I really sort of started in the beta of SharePoint 2007, when it really matured as a development platform, using all these old models that we don't use anymore, but
XML.
The feature framework and full trust code and all that. And worked for many years in, a lot of public facing websites, which we don't do anymore, but in those days, that was their content management system.
That.
Yeah. So I did that, and then gradually, like all of us over the years, we've become more of Microsoft 365. We moved to the cloud, focus now is Microsoft 365 and Teams. But I also do a bit of AI and machine learning as well, and I still do mobile development. Not so much on Windows Phone anymore, but
you finally gave away with the Windows Phone, didn't you?
Well, I still have it.
Well, he still has it.
No, the truth is the battery is now gone on this one. This is my, is still, here we go, let's power it up. It's still the old Nokia phone. I still have the Windows phone, but I had, the battery's gone on this one now, and so I've run out of. I did soldier on for a long time, though. Yeah, it became a thing. That was my, yeah. Bit of a, yeah, MCM, Windows Phone, public-facing websites on SharePoint. See a pattern here? Of the,
So what are you working on next?
So nowadays, yeah, the a lot of time doing training. I do training courses, some consulting, also a bit of exam authoring, quite a bit of machine learning. Sort of gone back to that's something I used to do many years ago, and I kind of come back to this as that's really matured, particularly on the Azure platform. So yeah.
Are you integrating the machine learning with Microsoft 365 then, and or how do you do that? So
that's part of it. Yes. But you know, there are a number of projects where people want to bring those two things together. Obviously, so there's opportunities there, including what's built into the platform, of course, which is starting to mature as well. So you've got to keep again, you know, a little bit of an eye on that and make sure you don't reinvent something that's built into Viva or something like that. But So it's interesting times, but just. You end up with your finger in so many pies that it becomes increasingly challenging to keep up with this technology. And you know, you've got to be able to do Azure, you've got to be able to do Teams, you've got to do Microsoft 365, machine learning. Yeah, it just goes on and on. So it's, whatever I'm working on, that's right? What I know about. And what I did last week, I've forgotten all.
Well, but I mean, it is interesting, right? Because like in the past, we used to do this one thing, SharePoint, and everything would fall into it, and that was kind of the box in which you would play. And nowadays, now that we are in a cloud, I feel like that there is so much more for us to tap into. Like as you say, we have Azure, and on Azure only, like, there's tons of services ready for us to use, right? Then we have 365 with all its stacks, services, and APIs inside data and all of that. And then you can integrate that into either your own apps or you can extend things in a cloud. So like you get a really rich scale of things you can do. So like at the end of the day, it feels to me like the limit is really what you can imagine, right?
Yeah, it sure felt when I first started in computers that you were hitting the limits of what you could do with the machines. You know, right. You couldn't get enough computer resources, and I used to think if only I had more computer power, if only I had a Cray.
Now you have a supercomputer that can do way more exactly. than your whole.
And now you have, perhaps not the best example, but now you have your phone. Now you have your phone. I just got to show this. Your phone, that is Windows, okay. Windows phone. If you know, but the so much power in the phone, and suddenly you find you just can't. Too many possibilities, and you get kind of analysis paralysis, and you just can't think what to do with it.
Well, but I guess maybe the reason for that is that in the past, like the way we would learn, like you would get a book. And that was it, right? There was nothing else. So you would have, and also whatever you would build, like you would need to, it would take ages to build and compile. So you would have all this time sitting around, staring outside the window, thinking things. Nowadays, it's like when you build things, they are fast. And then like even a second it takes, you are immediately on your phone, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. Am I doing this? Hey, you know, like distraction is all over the place. So we get all of this input. And we don't take really time to think anymore, it feels like.
Yeah, I think our productivity in some ways has gone down the toilet with so many interruptions, these instant. I don't like instant messaging. I mean, the last thing, the sort of thing we do where we're just focusing and trying to solve a problem, the last thing you need, it's like the telephone ringing or somebody comes up to you, you know, and the fact that you see somebody out of the corner of your eye and you think, I might be interrupted in 10 seconds time, boom, it's all gone. Even though they weren't, they just walked past anyway.
Yep.
But you already, it's upset your open concentration. Plan, yeah. So I'm, maybe it's just my personality, but that kind of work, you really need to be uninterrupted focus.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely an industry problem for sure. But now most of the people are working from home. So you might think you can do this if you have a separate room, but not all of the people have a separate room because then they have the family and kids and all of the other things running around.
Plus, you are on Teams, right? And as long as Teams are on, you get the same thing. Hey, there is this red thing like showing a message. And then you go there. It's like, gone.
But that's why you can actually do not disturb. So in Teams, or you can shut it down. You don't have to keep it sign on. So
well, I think that, I think the design of Teams is good because it's simple. I mean, it's not that there isn't that fussy complexity of things going on. You can switch these things off, and I have notifications off. You know, I just I can't that's deal. Fine. With notifications, you know, and so sometimes, you miss something. I was supposed to, there was a conference last week. I missed it.
I was supposed to be
speaking. Well, that probably rarely happens.
I do know somebody who actually missed their conference talk. They got their flight times wrong and arrived at the conference venue 2 hours after their talk was supposed to be. It happens.
I think it was last year in MVP Summit or year before when MVP Summit was actually happening physically in Redmond. I was flying over. And there was a plane, Boeing 747, maintenance problems or whatever. And we stayed an extra day in London. And that's always shuffles everything because I was basically flying over to have a session on the following day.
Yeah, the whole thing falls apart.
Exactly.
At least in my case. We have to stop the whole event. Vesa is not here.
At least in my case, especially for the past years, I've been trying to minimize the time on site. So it's kind of a, you're really arriving late and flying out immediately when actually suitable. So then whenever there's a one-day delay, you're like, well, now we have a problem. We need to shovel things.
Yeah.
At some point, it becomes work, right? Like you go work. You go there, you do your work, and you're gone. Like, it's not a funny trip. Like it's not a trip for leisure and to take time off to walk around Bellevue or Redmond City. Like you've been there so many times that it is like, yes, I will just do that. I know. Yes, we'll have a beer and then go back home.
Yeah.
True.
Now. And that's quite subjective. So some people are, I would say, almost smart enough to take some time and extra days off and potentially even fly family over to actually have that. If they have the luxury and option to do that, that's not always the case.
And so, kids have no school or they don't
have kids. Exactly. Well, nowadays, this is everybody's sitting from their office anyway, so nobody's flying. Yeah. So So I think we'll get there. Maybe potentially in certain level back at some point, but I don't think...
Eventually. One day.
We'll see. Now, Bill, what would be your tips kind of related on this overflow of information and connection? You've been around for a long time and you've been kind of catching up. You've been doing office add-ins and SPFX.
You've been around for a long time.
That's experience. There's nothing wrong to have experience. And long time is such a relative statement as well. Any tips you would say to somebody who's like concerned related on the amount of information and which they need to adapt?
Yeah, I think the problem is, and it always has been in technology, that you react to things. So some problem arises and you just firefight that problem and you learn. It's just in time learning. You learn just enough to solve that problem. You fix it and then you move on. And you never really get the big picture about the technology. And when you don't have that, then you make mistakes and you make wrong assumptions, or it's very difficult to learn that one thing because you don't have, you know, it doesn't fit into a framework of knowledge. So what I've found is depend on the individual, is if you can do some kind of course, or, and it doesn't have to be a paid course, you know, there are things like Microsoft Learn have lots and lots of resources. You can work your way through and learn the whole topic area. And then you, when you come to focus on something, you kind of, it takes you half the time to, yeah, to learn, to solve that particular problem. So it's sometimes broad knowledge is more valuable than having huge depth, because you can acquire that depth as and when the requirement arises. And then, as I say, with so much to know nowadays, I often find I've actually forgotten things. I did something 3 months ago. It's gone. You know, I've got.
Yeah.
And you go back to it. But reacquiring that knowledge is easier the second time round. And you usually find it's all changed anyway in the meantime. So you have to relearn it. So, it's like a revolving system of you. I've got a lot of detail on the thing that I'm doing right now. It's all up here. And then the rest of it's broad understanding.
That's actually really good kind of thinking. And then when you have that broad understanding, you can also adapt the things and combine the things more maybe freely, rather than have a really depth on one thing, which is then keeping you isolated on that particular topic. So,
yeah, but some really good learning resources now that we didn't have a few years ago. The Microsoft documentation is way, way better. Because of the sort of interactive editing and on GitHub, and the courses that you can get, you can acquire knowledge for nothing from LinkedIn Learning, Pluralsight. There are lots of resources out there that you can use to get up to speed, either on broadly, which I recommend, and also specifically as well. That can be a good way. Getting knowledge.
Maybe you also have an opinion or idea about things like change in tech, right? Because I can imagine that over the course of years, like, you have seen come and go, something stick, some like Windows Phone stick less. And especially nowadays, right, it feels like the pace of tech is so quick. Like, things like every single day, there is, as you say, new framework, there's new this. By the time you learn something, it's already gone and then it's old. So how would you advise people to be less rushed in a way? And, you know, like, how could they deal, from your experience, with the pace of things come and go, and people are stressed, like, I need to use the latest, greatest thing. Do you or don't you?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting question. So this is what happens, and one of the things is that the technology cycles around. So the same ideas keep recycling and coming around again, like fashion. And, right now, it's kind of no code is the big thing. AI actually is the big thing, but that's not the first time. You know, we've been around that cycle a few times. There was expert systems in the late 80s, which I remember I was involved in. Before that, there was a huge explosion of AI in the 1960s, which was actually before my time. You might be surprised to hear. So these things come around in cycles, and so a lot of the time the ideas are sort of similar as they come around again. But what was your question?
How would you, or do you have any advice for folks, like, how should we deal with this really high pace of change in tech?
So you just gotta keep learning. I mean, it's just continuous learning. And it's more so now, but we have had this before. You know, I mean, it was crazy around about 2000, and there was a dot-com boom, and there was a new version of the browser, which was a newish technology then. A new one came around every 6 weeks, and all your JavaScript stopped working. Well, no change there then.
Still the case.
But it was, continuous churn, and then it kind of quietened down for a bit. That's the point I was going to say. When you've learned how to use React, say, and somebody comes along and says, "Oh, look, Vue! It's so exciting, this new thing. Let's change to Vue. Let's drop React and use Vue instead." Not so much. You know, the differences between these technologies are often quite small, and I think you you've got to just hold back and say, we're not going to jump ship until there's a very, very clear business argument. You know, it's really going to give us 100% better developer performance or something. It's not worth chasing that sort of 5%. You know, this technology is slightly better, but it's not really enough. And yes, everybody's talking about it, but these things come and go. Angular was huge about 5 years ago. Yeah. They did a version 2. I think they kind of dropped the ball a bit, and it went into decline. There's a few technologies like that, particularly in mobile development. These things just come and go. So you know, they flare up. The common one is called, I can't even remember. It's called Flutter. from Google. Yeah, Flutter is a. And we just keep the Xamarin, and there's about 100 just as a push some code in here and out will pop an application for iOS and Android, and they just come and go with such frequency. Sometimes you have to say, look, you know, we've invested in this technology, we accept it might not be the best one, but it's just not worth changing at this point, and we just have to plow on with building on. Otherwise, you end up like Charles Babbage, where he just kept thinking, oh, this is a better way of doing it. And he never finished building his mechanical computer because he had about 10 almost finished computers.
Agile, right? It was agile.
It's a technology. and you end up like that.
And that's actually an interesting challenge, because I remember before I joined Microsoft, I was working in a smaller software company and we were building software and products. And one of the challenges what we kept on having all the time is that you bet on some technology, like you said, and then the following version comes out and you're like, well, that's better than what we've done here. And then you really need to start reevaluating that. Okay, so we invested X amount of time and money and resources on this one. Do we actually finish this, or do we actually reset and start from scratch based on the learnings what we got from that one? So because you have to do that every now and then, because technology is evolving. It's an interesting challenge,
guess,
for sure.
But I guess it also twofold, right? I guess it's twofold in a way that, one, like, there is new version of the same stack you use. Like, there is new version of dependency. And sure, like, you want to update, because the more you lag, the harder it is to upgrade, because there are more differences, things change, things have more impact on your code base and whatnot. But then the other thing is, like, gulp versus grunt. It's just an opinion. Like, at the end of the day, using one versus the other doesn't empower you to solve business problems in better ways. It's just a tool towards, like, at the end of the day, you can do the same. Whether it's you build your app on Vue or React or Angular, users wouldn't even know. Because they will not do view source,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Sometimes people get very invested, almost to the point of a religious, you know, their clan. You know, we're in the Angular clan. We hate JavaScript. We will never use JavaScript. Yeah, and sometimes there isn't a huge difference between C++ and C and Java, actually, and these different, you know, they're similar. Okay, if you go to functional programming, things start getting a bit weird and different. Yeah. But most of these object-oriented languages are very similar. If you know one, you can quickly switch to another one.
And then JavaScript is completely new. Sorry, I have to say the JavaScript is not really based on to Java, because JavaScript was named as a JavaScript because Java was so big. So the people who needed to come up with a fancy and cool name, they name is JavaScript.
Yeah,
so
I know.
They can piggyback on the.
It's so ridiculous. It's such a terrible name choice. And yes, you're right. There's a similarity in syntax. That's the worst thing, is there's a similarity in syntax because it's a curly brace language, but their object model is completely different. So it's and people don't get this, and most people have only written a few lines of JavaScript in a web page, so they haven't really seen the richness. It's actually quite a well-designed language. but it's because it uses this prototypal inheritance system, which is completely different to a classical language. Once you start getting into it, if you start thinking with a C# or C++ or even a Java mindset, then you start making all kinds of assumptions that are totally wrong, and weird stuff happens. And there's a few fundamental mistakes in the language as well. So there's a little bit of weirdness in there as well. So TypeScript has covered a lot of that up. But really bad naming choice.
Sorry, Waldeck, I jumped on your question.
So the only thing I wanted to add was that, to the point Bill made, was about that, like, if you pick, let's say, I don't know, C#, Java, right? Sure, syntax isn't the same, but if you get to talk to an expert, like, they might tell you C# is, I don't know, some fraction of second faster at X. For 9 out of 10 times, the type of apps we build in business, it is totally irrelevant. The same thing with as Angular and Vue and whatever. Like, you might win like 0.0 second to load the page. Yeah, and then you wait 2 seconds on API call.
Yeah,
it's like totally, you know, irrelevant points about, yeah, but this is better. Like, and it's exactly what Bill said. It is religious. It's basically a following. Like, I think of myself as an Angular dev. So to me, I have a hammer. Everything is a nail.
Yeah.
If you say a web app, my answer is, no matter what you say, Angular, you know? And I think that there are folks like that who basically see the world that way. And
at the same time, it's completely understandable. If you're trained in Angular, you know, you're going to use Angular. If you're trained in React, you're going to use React.
And you're comfortable with it as well.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
It's your comfort zone. You don't want to move. Everybody else is using React, but I know Vue backwards, or Angular backwards. You know, I don't want to learn another. You know, who wants to do that? That's boring. You know, I know how to do it in Angular. Let me use Angular, and you know, that's you have to deal, particularly with teams, development teams. You have to deal with this.
Yeah, but I guess like eventually, the interesting thing is that, like, if you think about Vue versus Angular and React. Like, there are no business problems that you can solve one, but not in the other, right? It's just a framework. And sure, they have their strengths and weaknesses. But in context of an app that you build for a customer, a user, there is no difference. You can achieve the same things in different ways, but you can achieve the same result, right?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. But a lot of people, you know, they have a software project and they go into this sort of phase where, OK, we've got to decide which framework we're going to use. And six months later, they haven't written anything.
Evaluating, and by the time they are done, there's a new version. And they're like,
sometimes you just go,
we chose for.
We got to decide and just go with that. I think Microsoft did that with React in, you know, they made that call because we just got to go all the wood behind the arrowhead for whatever it is. It's not that important as long as we all use the same thing. And sort of mixing up technologies is what really works out expensive and costs you if you allow that to happen. So it's difficult sometimes.
Well, and I mean, even now, right? Microsoft is a big place. There are many development teams, right? And even now you see some things like are built in React, but there are still some things built in Knockout and Angular, because that development team is exactly, as you say, like, they were comfortable doing that and they could do that. They could achieve their goal in shortest amount of time possible. So, like, you could try to reschool them in React. You could try to find different team or say, like, build it, just do it. Because at the end of the day, it's all still based on an assumption that that thing will work. Right. And we can spend a lot of time trying to make the perfect thing. But maybe we will eventually ship the thing, the V1, and see, well, it doesn't work. It doesn't solve. It is not what the customers needs, right? And then, like, you will scratch the whole thing or rewrite it or change it, whatever.
That's the agile approach. You get minimal viable product out there and see what happens before you put it, just try and make it perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. which is exactly what we do in many of the cases in from a Microsoft perspective. And we don't want to basically, why would you invest of tens of millions to a certain functionality and make it 100%, let's say, build it for 2 years and then put it out. And then people are saying, this isn't what we're expecting.
We've done that in the past, right?
Well, we have, yes. I think we learned.
We'd build for three or every 3 years, there would be a new version. We would build for, I don't know, like, few months, then document and test, release, burn DVDs, send everybody MSDN folders, like thick things of new
version. A new version was a big investment. It was a 3-year waterfall project to get there.
Yeah, and it's like back then, like every fix was very expensive, right? Because like you had all these media printed or stamped or burned, and if there was something wrong there, well, it would need to be, you would need to ship a fix to everyone per mail, right?
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, this is not that long ago either, a lot of it was manual testing. There was no automated test suites. Sure. So you'd have a test team that had to go through all these tests because you change one thing. You had to go through the whole test suite.
Yeah. And that was... Simple but relatively recent example, which is 100% still valid, which because I got a request and question on this one last week, which is, are we going to upgrade the SharePoint framework version of SharePoint 2019? Answer is no, because we can, because that would require end-to-end testing of the whole out-of-the-box UX layer and introduce a completely new set of versions for out-of-the-box UX and web parts and everything else. So can we as a dev team introduce a new version of SPFX in 2019? Mm-hmm. Well, not without a significant investment across the whole version.
And risk,
absolutely, yes. That as well. So it's not really a super like old challenge. Every single on-premises deployment still kind of has this challenge. The cloud is luckily different because we can update that and we can introduce buttons and take them away, which though messes up people quite significantly when we do that.
Yeah, it doesn't so, it doesn't guarantee there'll be no mistakes, but
exactly,
but we can
exactly
fix them quickly.
Exactly.
There isn't the overhead of pushing that version out and making all the glass master CDs and then finding there's a problem.
Yes. Yeah. Indeed. Now let's actually do some articles at this point. Let's run through the weekly news from Microsoft and community side of the house, or some of the articles which we are aware. So first of all, from the Microsoft Teams blog, track projects and share news in Teams with two new Power Apps. And this is actually kind of an interesting effort. So there are sample solutions from the Power Platform team targeted for Microsoft Teams, which people can even customize. And that's actually pretty cool. So you can actually personalize those solutions using the Power Platform capabilities and then push it out in the tenant. So really, really cool stuff. So really, really great. Now, other news from the SharePoint team, controlling app access on a specific SharePoint site collection is now available in Microsoft Graph. I can kind of say that it took me a long time to figure out what is the title to make this interesting and descriptive as an announcement. But maybe that makes sense. So controlling the app access in the SharePoint site collection level rather than in a tenant level. That's really the story behind it. So
yeah. So in other words, in AAD, you can now build an AAD app and request for that app to have only access for one specific site as opposed to the whole tenant.
Correct. So basically resource specific consent, which is something which Microsoft Teams used as their terminology. And the SharePoint implementation is slightly different, coming from a slightly different perspective, but the objective is exactly the same. So you can have an application which has permissions only to a specific site collection, which is important. So really cool stuff as well. Now, what else? We also announced the Microsoft Teams App Generator version 3 last week from a community-driven effort site. So Victor Villain from Avenatis is leading this effort in the BMP side of the house, and he's working a lot together with the community team on all of the new changes in here. And there's quite a lot of interesting stuff and improvements in the 3.0 version. So really, really cool stuff as well. And we're going to actually touch that slightly. There's a separate podcast where he talks about the latest changes as well. So really, really cool. And by the way, if you're wondering, so Yo Teams and the Teams Toolkit are basically, you can use Yo Teams and then use the Teams Toolkit to deploy the stuff. Or if you prefer, right now the Teams Toolkit is still mainly JavaScript based. Yo Teams is TypeScript based. So there are advantages and disadvantages. But teams are actually having discussions all the time together. So they're not really competing tools, different tools, different options.
Different audience too, right?
Yes, true, true. Now, Microsoft Graph Mailback article, Blazor WebAssembly and Microsoft Graph with Azure Functions. This was from Fabian.
Fabian, yes.
Yeah, Fabian, that's what I've remembered. So really cool, explaining the how to get started, how do we do stuff, and using the Blazor, calling the Azure function in a secured way. So good blog post related on that one. Certainly a scenario for Microsoft Teams applications as well. So really, really cool stuff. What else? There was an announcement related on new Microsoft Edge replacing Edge legacy with April's Windows 10 update Tuesday release, which is good. So we're finally getting away from the Microsoft Edge legacy. So,
yeah, which is the original Edge and the new Edge that is the Edge Chrome, based on Chrome. Yeah.
Yes,
it's Chrome JavaScript engine. Yeah.
Yes,
Credge.
V8.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Something also new. This one was really cool. So Valo people tweeted this one in LinkedIn. I haven't seen actually internally yet that this will be announced, but I think it's safe to say that it's in internet, so we can actually mention that in the this week's summary. But if you go to the adaption.microsoft.com, where you can find adaption material related on the Microsoft 365, targeted for business users, developers, IT professional, a lot of stuff here. In the solutions, there's now a new partner solution gallery available. And from here, you can actually see different partner offerings for Microsoft 365. And this is actually really cool. So right now, there isn't that much. But if you are a partner, please submit your solution. And then there will be a validation and a process of getting the solution available in here. So really, really cool stuff. And then you can go, let's say, Lightning Tools as a good example. So you can go to the Lightning Tools company level. So you'll see all of the company, all of the details related on the company, so what the Lightning Tools is providing and those products, and then an about Lightning Tools. And then you can go to the individual solution level as well. So you'll see more detail related on that functionality and what does it actually solve and how does it actually work and all of that stuff. So really, really cool stuff for sure.
Nice.
Now, this one, do you want to actually talk about Waldeck on this one? So I'm not talking all the time, just me.
I think we talked about it. We did.
We did. Yeah. But yeah, so Microsoft 365 BMP block. There's so many articles in here from last week as well. Yes, Waldeck, feel free.
You want to talk, and then I talk. Exactly. So we wanted to launch a place where we have content that is aimed at everybody who wants to start building things on 365. And at that point, we don't distinguish between low code, no code, little code, a lot of code. Basically, whenever you want to build something, we want to help you understand what's possible, what are the different terms that we use day in, day out, like dev 10 and JSON, because these things, like, we don't even think twice about using that. But for someone who is new, like, these are all obstacles that you need to get through in order to be able to build things. And it's a shame. So with this place, we want to create basically a library of content that explains all of that. And also in parallel, a place where you can ask things without any, you know, like your question has to be written a specific way, or you need to have done so much research by yourself before you ask stuff, basically giving you a safe place to ask things that you do not understand, if you're stuck, if you need any help, or if you want to simply show what you've built.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, sharing your whatever you built with others. Absolutely. It's one way of teaching other people to be successful. So
exactly.
That's it. And then you'll get feedback and then everybody can learn from each other, which is super, super important. So this one is from Vesna Noppanen, related on the new articles in this location. So from last week, how to create and improve Microsoft Teams files approval process using Azure Logic App. So really cool story on him related on that one, and a long one. So really step by step walking through the steps of making that happen. So really, really cool. And already a lot of feedback on that one as well. And then the other one is from was from Tony Paul, and just raised two of the articles from last week. I use Node Version Manager for developing SPSS fix apps, really, really powerful thing as well, because if you want to actually do or have multiple Node versions installed to your computer, which you might need to be able to do depending again on what kind of solutions you're building, he walks through what it is and how you use the NVM to actually make that happen and how you then install the stuff on the right version and all of that. So really, really cool stuff as well. Great article. Now, Waldeck, you had two new articles within the last week. So this one was
correct. Correct, right. So this article goes in depth about if you want to build a Teams tab that's connected either to Microsoft Graph or reach out to an API, how can you bridge this gap of auth? Like auth, we all know, is the very thing, first thing you have to tackle every time you want to connect to an API on 365 or your own APIs behind AAD. And it's not always trivial. So with this, I give you kind of approach how you can do it in a safe way, so that you don't expose any tokens, passwords, credentials, secrets anywhere, and you can bridge this gap from your tab to the data that is stored in 365. So it's a very interesting article. If you build Teams tabs, that is definitely something you should have a look at.
Absolutely, absolutely. And another one you actually published this morning.
Correct. So like this one takes a step back, explaining you what kind of apps can you actually build on 365, right? Because we often are already like deep in the weeds, and we've been around for years, so we kind of assume that everybody knows. But in reality, like every day, new people start building things, and there's a lot of people who actually don't and might be interested. So with that, I aim to take a step back and give you a high-level overview of what kind of apps you can build on 365, what are the options, how would you think about them, and then eventually also, if you build your app, can you tap into 365 all data insights that are being stored there or not, and if so, how?
Yeah.
So this is a very intro-level article explaining that.
Yeah, really good stuff as well, absolutely. And then this one is from Marcus Miller. Use Microsoft Graph to create SharePoint items. He's been focusing on the SharePoint side of the house, and this article is also hashtag with BMP Weekly. So of course we'll cover these things, but basically walking through the different assets and how to get created in using the Microsoft Graph. So really, really great article walking through on those options. And he mentioned that this is his last one before maturity leave, or parental leave. So yeah, that's the right term. So congratulations for that one. So good to have time off. Always health, family, always first, and then work and hobbies. So super important thing. This one is from Srinas Varukala. Use Microsoft Graph to set granular permissions to SharePoint online sites for the Azure AD application. So basically the story related on, okay, so now that the announcement has been done, how can I actually do and how can I make that happen in my code? So that's actually really cool. Good to see immediately blog posts available in the internet related on these things and a lot of code. So really cool. Then we have a few articles from the recording. So Modern SharePoint, how to get blank page no header for easy reuse from Philip Worrell. And this is basically discussion between Matt Wade and Katie Swanson. Katie is one of the designers in a SharePoint, OneDrive SharePoint team, explaining how can you get a page without the title, which is a story, or how can you duplicate that. And basically, Philip is showing the steps which Katie shared with the community. So this is actually great teamwork. Somebody's asking questions, the Microsoft designer answers, and then a third person writes a story about that.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
So everybody can benefit out of it. Because not all of the people are in Twitter. So I think only a fraction of people are in Twitter. So we need to remember.
Plus, again, it's very easy for us to assume, well, I mean, you create copy of the page, you remove everything. Like, well, but how do you do all of that, right?
Exactly.
If you are a content editor or a person who doesn't code at all, how would you know? Like, you might even, like somebody might quick, easily, you know, like basically the same thing we do with dev. the first step is always like you get a token and it's a single step, where in reality, like that encompasses like half an hour of work, assuming you already know what you need. If you don't, it might be even a whole week, right? Bill?
Especially for me.
I didn't say that. But I mean, yeah, it's things like that that often get people blocked, and we don't even realize that because we do it so often, right? That for us, it's just like, it's implicit. Well, you know, right? Well, people don't.
That's the difficulty of writing instructions and documentation, is trying to put yourself in the mind. It's not always easy, and you miss things. Yeah.
Now, the next article from the recording, how to homeschooling in pandemic is a superb way to workplace learning. So this is really interesting, kind of a softer article related on the changes caused by the homeschooling and the pandemic situation from Megan Strand. And really good story related on that then. And how the homeschooling impacts the thinking as well. So really, really actually relatively long one as well. And thinking through the things and the comfort zone anxieties and all of that stuff. So really good stuff as well. And then SharePoint Syntex and Microsoft Viva conversation with Chris McNulty from Sarah. And this is really around the fact that the Viva Topics was going live or G8 last 2 weeks ago as part of the Viva at the Viva announcement. And this is really having a discussion with Chris McNulty, who's a director in marketing, responsible of the project Cortex, which doesn't exist kind of anymore because now it's Viva Topics and SharePoint Syntex. So talking about what does it now mean in practice with the three community members. Some really cool stuff as well. And then the final, which we wanted to actually talk about, just call out as well. So Microsoft 365 Developer Podcast. So Jeremy and Paul have been doing this for quite a long time. Absolutely brilliant podcast too. It really focuses on the developer platform. And on the latest one, they talk about the Yo Teams as an example, IoT and Azure Data with Victor Villain. So Victor is the technical lead for the Yo Teams open source project. So really cool stuff. But there's a lot of other cool articles within the past weeks and months and even years, because I think this has existed for quite a long time. So
yes.
Good. Let me actually close the sharing and let's actually do some few summary lines and close up for today, right? It is Monday. It is US is having holiday today, which means that I don't have that many meetings in the evening, which is pretty cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't. You're not aware of that. No, I wasn't.
Yeah, there's a presidential day in the US. So,
gotcha. Things you learn.
Yes. But it's good. So that means that it's going to be more silent today than normally on Monday.
Well, so there was a thing I wanted to ask you, but let's. There goes your free day.
Yeah. There's plenty of questions still in Teams, so it's all good. All good. So, anything specific that you're going to work on this week? I can start actually this time. I will start.
Okay. Yeah,
so we're looking into getting SharePoint Framework 1.12 out. So that's going to be released. I think it's safe to say rather days than weeks, but we still need to make sure that everything is working properly. And there's an interesting, let's say, dilemmas related on the Node version, which one to use and which of these work and which way. And then when there's such a humongous dependencies within the NPM world always. So which of those packages have been updated to which Node version to support, and making all of that test matrix properly work. It's just frustrating. So, but that's something what we're now trying to finalize. We're planning to actually release two more versions of SPFX this spring with the current roadmap. So that means that there will be, even though we wouldn't get to Node 14 necessarily with 12, we can get to Node 14 in the next version. So,
you have to, because Node 10, which we currently use, is going away in April.
But Node 12 is still valid for a long time. So,
long time. Define long time.
Well, everything is so subjective. But of course, we want to go to the Node 14 as fast as possible. But again, we need to make sure that all of the dependencies and everything else is ready to go as well. So, but that's my job for this week, and prioritizing that one. Well, Bill, what are you planning to do? Anything interesting?
I've got a couple of bugs and extensions to do to an Office add-in, actually, for PowerPoint that I use in when I'm giving courses. That gives it's a countdown timer, so that while people are away, you know, well, we're going to take a coffee break, you've got to now say exactly when we're going to go back. Otherwise, half the people won't turn up for the next section of the course. So I've got some work to do on that. There's a mobile app I'm working on, which is needs a bit of work doing on as well. So I'll hope to get some time to work on that and fit that around, you know, various bits of consultancy work that I've got. The boring stuff. I mean, the stuff for clients.
Pays the bills. And,
And sorry, yes. And and I hope I'll get a chance to do some proposals for the Cloud Summit, which is later this year. There's a bit more chance that it's going to run, I hope, and get a chance to get involved with that, I hope. So that's basically it.
Yeah, that is actually a real thing to do, is to plan the sessions and submit proper sessions and think through what to cover and all of that one to get the speaking position. And now, so actually on that one, I want to spend 2 minutes on that one. Any tips from you, Bill, related on the conference call submissions?
I think you've got to think about... I mean, first of all, it's got to be a topic that you know about and you're interested in. So I think some people think, oh, I've got to get to speak somewhere. So what can I, and they kind of contrive some talk that they think has all the right buzzwords in. And the problem there is that everybody submits on those topics. And secondly, you know, that you then, it might not be something you're particularly knowledgeable or interested in. So I try to stick to things that I'm interested in and that I've been working on, that I think would be useful to share with the community. So it's the audience, you know, it's for the audience rather than trying to think about how can I get in there, you know, what is going to be useful to an audience, and that I can add something based on my knowledge. And and then you submit all these proposals, and as you know, you then 6 months later, somebody says, "Congratulations, you're speaking at the blah blah blah,"
and you're like, "I did what? What was I thinking?"
There's that kind of disconnect.
Yeah.
So the other trick, I suppose, is try and just give yourself a bit of wiggle room in the abstract, because technology might have developed in the meantime, and you might want to introduce.
That's a good point as well. Yeah.
And you might want to. You might have. Your focus might have changed a little bit. So I try not to be too specific on exactly which technology, and talk more about the problem I want to solve, but don't always succeed. But
cool.
That's my two cents. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good. Really good. Now, Waldeck, what are you going to do this week?
For work, I'm working on some new things for Microsoft Learn around Graph. So that will be coming hopefully soon. And then on community side, last week I spent some time trying to migrate the CLI for Microsoft 365 from ADAL to MSAL. And along the way, I learned a few interesting things. Like one is, which I find one of the biggest changes between the two, is that MSAL no longer exposes a refresh token. So it's like in the past, we kind of were like, one of the big premises of doing things in AD was that you get a refresh token, which is a multi-resource refresh token, meaning you get token for one, and then you can exchange it for a token to get access to SharePoint, Exchange, Graph, whatever you need on the Microsoft Cloud.
Yep.
That token on MSAL is not available to you. It is still there. It's just not available to you because MSAL wants you to use their API from the SDK to authenticate so that it can then apply some intelligence into when your token expires. So basically it wants to help you. But if you already know auth because you spend all the time learning that, you're like, but I know all that. I have all of that in my code already. Decision tree, when token expire. Well, yeah, like you're doing all of that because ADAL didn't do. And now you're moving to MSAL and you're like, you can just basically scrap like half of your code because that's implemented in MSAL, but then you also need to like move differently because it's kind of chicken and egg, where especially in an app like CLI, which offers you 5 different ways to authenticate. And you can do app only, delegated, but in order to get to that point, you need to tell it, you need to get data from MSAL's cache. But to do that, you need to define type of app. But you don't know type of app because it's in a cache. So it's kind of like, how do you start? How can you resume the context you had the last time you run it? So that was an interesting exercise around trying to migrate from ADAL to MSAL, because ADAL has been deprecated, I think, already year back. But MSAL node, which we need for CLI, has been announced for February this year. Yeah. So we kind of deprecated ADAL, but then didn't offer for alternative. So it's like kind of like a limbo state. Yes, we want to move away, but we need something GA because we don't want to bet on something that is still in preview. So,
and we've got MSAL 1 and MSAL 2 now as well. So you've
Yes, exactly. Well, the easy thing is that for node, there is none of them. Like, there is only one version available in preview. So there is not even choice. But yes, absolutely that, right? So I hope that the SDK that will ship will kind of make it easier to move from ADAL or even build new apps on that, and basically help guide us through a choice of, okay, what do you need? What kind of flow do you need? And so forth and so on. So that it's not like you don't need to relearn everything, but have more of a guided experience. If you want to do that, there's your choice. And the cool thing is that that team behind the SDK has done a really great job already now with samples. Like, there are like mini apps that don't have just this one call, and you're like, yeah, but then you're missing import statement, you're missing kind of 5 other things. No, it's mini apps that run, that show the whole flow end-to-end, and you have everything in simple place, and that is so invaluable. This is really great.
Yeah, super, super cool. Really, really great. Yeah. We should add a link to those samples in the notes as well, by the way.
Yes, so. Yes. And then I will spend also some time testing SPFX v1.12.
Yeah,
just to ensure that everything's
are working properly. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Now, before we're shipping, but yes, that's hopefully going to happen soon. Anyway, thank you, Bill, for joining us on this time. Thank you, Waldeck, on here, and we will come back with a next BMP Weekly within a week. Thank you. Cheers, everybody, for watching.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.